Hi, today is March 17th, 2024. It's St. Patrick's Day. Mobius Podcast 502. I'm Todd Ogasawara, my good friend, a good Dr. Westfall. And happy St. Patty's Day.
Thank you. Yeah, this is the first time we've had a quote-unquote normal podcast in a while without special guests. And so I think we remember how to do this with just the two of us. But
It's not just that. You know, we've been using Adobe Podcast Studio Beta since late last summer. And I really like it, except it's beta, you know, so it's been a little unstable now and then.
It betrayed us.
And last week, when we had our friends Frank McPherson and Don Sorcinelli on for 501, we had a really interesting problem where Don, in the middle of the podcast, you can't hear it in the podcast because, people who listen to it.
Yeah.
Don mentions to us, "Hey, Todd, you know, it says I'm not recording on my side." I said, "Really? I see recording on my side." So I just ignored
Don. You know, we told him everything was good and that he was just delusional and that he was wrong.
Yeah.
As we often do, we just dismissed him.
And so...
Turns out...
He was right.
Yeah. Turns out every so often, a Sorcinelli is, you know... I always joke the line I always use is every so often a blind squirrel finds nuts. Every so often a Sorcinelli gets it right. So, you know.
So our buddy Don was not recorded at all. And fortunately for me, the Adobe podcast team has been very communicative through this beta process. You know, it'd be easy to ghost me. You know, I'm just a nobody. But they've been very communicative, very responsive. And they did tell me, hey, there's a kind of a secret undocumented debug tool, you know, web-based, that you can access by doing this. So I did that. And one of the things I found was that it records all of our tracks. It, being Adobe Podcast Studio, records all our tracks individually, which makes sense. That's how it runs the AI in each of our audio tracks and cleans it up and volume levels, blah, blah. So what I was able to do was retrieve the tracks that you and Frank McPherson and I recorded. And then I brought it into the open source Audacity audio app and looked for all the blank spaces where, you know, there's nobody talking and said, well, that must be where Don was speaking. And I cut them all out. So you will hear us
refreshing. This was your opportunity to finally get payback from that episode that we recorded without you. You could have given yourself a Don impersonation voice and just said whatever you had felt like in those blank spots. And really done whatever you wanted to do. It could have been, you know, Don could have gone on a rant about something. He could have, you know, said a number of things that he might not have actually said. Of course, with knowing Don, it's real hard to know what he wouldn't say. So,
It probably would have been an intellectual property violation, but I could have inserted Dan Aykroyd into, you know, Saturday Night Live. John, you ignorant...
Yeah. The best part is, if this is about 3-4 years from now, we have this problem, we'll just take all of Don's audio from previous podcasts, throw it into a language model, and it will just tell us what Don would have said, and we could just get it to say that to us. We're still a little bit away from that.
Or if we're all busy, we could just have it do all of us and say, pick a few techie topics and have the AIs talk to each other for 40 minutes or so.
I think that sounds like an interesting experiment. I think we should try this out at some point.
So, at any rate, that's what happened with 501 and why it may sound strange. Some of my editing may have been a little klutzy. I think there are some like over tracks that I can't figure out why, because I thought I did a pretty good job of cutting it in the right places. And by the way, one of the things I found in Audacity is when you have three tracks, as we have, you know, left, Audacity actually lets you select all three of the empty spaces at once. You don't have to cut it. You just select across the three tracks and it does a clean cut. So it should be pretty tight editing. But when I listened to it, there were still some weird audio glitches. Who knows? It may have been Don bleeding over and something. But anyway, my apologies to our good friend Don. Or as John pronounced it correctly, as we learned a couple of weeks ago, Sorcinelli.
We're never going to let him live that one down. Now that we know.
That's the right way to pronounce it, apparently, you know? So
yeah, he doesn't even know that, but we know.
Yeah, yeah, I've been doing it wrong for 20 years. But anyway, thanks to Adobe Podcast Beta team for helping me out with this. At least let me recover, you know, 75% of our podcast, so to speak, and getting something out there so I didn't feel like I wasted everybody's time, except for Don. We did waste Don's time, my apologies, Don.
Yeah, we wasted all, you know. But, you know, it's not the first time we've done that, and it probably won't be the last.
Yeah.
We wasted Don's time with whatever randomness we want to talk about. So
very true.
You know,
very true. All right.
Don has put up with us for a number of years now. He will continue to.
He's a good guy.
By force.
So, switching topics. So, another week has come and gone with no new iPads. I am sorely disappointed.
Yeah, I am. I am too. We'll talk about that later in our discussion topic because I want something. I don't know what it is, but I want it.
You want it, and you want it now. And the other thing is, speaking of AI replacing us in the future, the other thing that's interesting is that Microsoft has been releasing sort of discipline-specific co-pilots. The most recent co-pilot for finance, and there's also co-pilot for sales and co-pilot for service. And John, you've got something set up there too.
Yeah, so when you go into co-pilot, and I'm not sure if this is because I'm a subscriber or whoever has this, there's a little thing in the upper right that's Copilot GPTs, and you can create your own. There's actually a way to train it for specific things that you might want to do. The examples they give you are, of course, Microsoft Designer, and then three custom GPTs, one for vacation planning, one for cooking, and one for fitness training. So I find it very interesting that Microsoft is already starting to roll out this idea that, hey, if you keep asking us to do the same thing over and over again, why don't you just create your own and roll it that way?
So I see.
That's what I might start doing that to play around, because I've been doing a lot of image generation and I always have the same kind of style I wanted to do it in. So I thought about maybe exploring this. I just have not gotten around to it quite yet.
Yeah. So I see co-pilots. Like you said, a designer, vacation planner, cooking assistant, and fitness trainer. There's also plugins, which I hadn't noticed. So there's a search plugin, which makes sense. But there's also a plugin for Instacart, Kayak, Klarna, OpenTable, Shop, and Suno, which is the song creation AI.
Yeah, I used the Suno plugin a couple of weeks ago. Just one night I was bored and played with it. It created a pretty cool little song.
Yeah.
What I have not played around with yet, and I'm curious if I can get into, is I'd love it if I could export some of that and play around with it in like GarageBand or Logic Pro. You know, how much of a song can you really do? Because it will do, you know, a 1 minute or 1 minute 30 second song. But it'd be kind of cool to be able to take some of those files and create more than just that.
So. Yeah, we could have a Mobile Hughes album, you know?
Yes.
Yes.
Don will be silent on it. We will invite him, but we will not record any of his audio, and that will be the joke for the entire album.
Well, what is it? John Cage, 254, two minutes and 54 seconds of silence.
Yeah, so we'll just do something like that.
And then, you know, I don't know if you watch CBS Sunday Morning or some of the other shows that are on the weekends, but one of the things they do most weeks, unfortunately or sadly, is they have an in memoriam section of past. And so it won't be a weekly feature, I hope, but we're going to have an in memoriam for services. And this week, the service that I'd like to note for in memoriam is yet another Google service that's biting the dust. Keen, K-E-E-N. Which was a really interesting service that really never really worked right. So it looked like Pinterest, in format. It had a bunch of squares of things on it. But the difference is that if you create a topic of interest, and I did one on doodling, this was several years ago, it would then go out and find similar references to doodling. And it found some good stuff, actually. The problem was editing and updating it manually, you know, adding my own stuff, was just such a giant pain that after maybe 2 or 3 weeks of playing with it and liking it in terms of what it could do, but hating it in terms of how to do it, I gave up. So Pinterest will be fine. So Keen, which is staykeen.com, studying staykeen.google.staykeen.com is shutting down on March 24th. So we're about a week away, roughly, week and a half away. And of course, Google being Google, they do allow you to export your stuff. So I did export my data because it had some, there's actually some interesting research on doodling, by the way, in terms of learning, that sort of thing. Quite interesting. So Google Keen, we hardly knew you.
You know, if we're going to start doing a memorial for services, then I think we do need to start talking about the serial killer that is Google, because Google has spawned and created more and killed more services, I think, over its lifetime than companies that have been around for quadruple or even, you know, higher amounts of years longer than Google. It's almost, I think, a cultural problem at Google. It's just they kill things a lot.
This is true. And, you know, people don't talk about it much anymore, but years, maybe 10, 12, 15 years ago, people used to talk about the Silicon Valley philosophy of fail fast. You know, if something's going to be a failure, do it fast so you don't waste money on it, which unfortunately a lot of companies didn't get the don't waste a lot of money part. But a couple of years, I guess in terms of services, a couple of years is failing fast. Maybe not fast enough, but it is sad. So, Keen, great idea. I think with large language models, it could be even better. So I hope somebody else tries it because I think it's really cool to, you know, sort of do a, have a bookmark of topics for yourself, sort of like what you're talking about, building your own GPT model and be a, you know, and then more interestingly, not just knowing about that model, but or knowing about that discipline, the model, but also searching for other related topics and adding to the model in a self-searching way, you know, in terms of the model itself going out and look for stuff that gets knowledge. Okay. Next up, and, you know, I'm a little bit nervous because we're still recording after last debacle. I have a new gadget in that I have not tested yet. I opened the box, I looked at it, I'm kind of flattening the paper that came with it so I can actually feed it in. Like, it's a thermal printer. Now, John got me started on thermal printers years ago, maybe, before I retired. It's about 2 years ago. And he convinced me that it was a really, really, really good idea to get a small thermal printer specifically for labels. So not big paper, but labels. And he was right. I now have three of them.
Well, and I have a funny story about mine, but go ahead and talk about yours. So I started with this little Photo Mimo, one that looks like a postcard or an envelope. And a couple of weeks, I don't have a printer at home because I never have to print things personally. I just, you know, I have a printer at work and that's the only place I have to print anything. I had to send in some paperwork to something, basically a government agency. I had to send something. I needed like a really little amount of space to write something. Literally like, here is my name. Here is what this is for, process it. And so I used this little printer to not only print the label for the envelope and the return label, but also to print this little like thing that was, you know, basically a business card size and just said, here's what this is for. And I put my name on it and I like just paper clipped it to the, you know, thing. I was like, well, I'm not going to waste a whole sheet of paper on this. Right. So I'm going to, you know, use this little, what looks like a receipt tape. And it worked just fine. The agency got it and processed it. But I'm sure they probably looked at it and went, what the? This is like the littlest writing we've ever seen. But yeah, well, it was useful for that. I was happy I didn't spend any money on a piece of paper.
On a as a retired government employee, I can tell you that I'm sure that whoever opened that envelope and saw that probably got a good chuckle. And you made a government employee amused, even for a few seconds. So you did a good thing.
Yeah, well, that doesn't come often for government employees.
No. No, good chuckle moments are far and few in between. But anyway, so I got a thermal printer in for review. It's a Photo Mimo, by the way. So same brand that you recommended to me for the label printer. Except this one does 8.5 by 11. So I, you know, because I have currently a printer that will remain unnamed, but I will say it starts with an H, ends with a P. And this company.
And in the middle has many, many profanities in the middle of that H and the P. Yeah. I'm familiar with a brand of the, you know, starts with an H and ends with a P, and often has many expletives put in the middle of it.
And as you probably know, as many of our friends know, this particular brand, and I think others too, has been bricking printers. If A, you're using a non-HP, in my case, an inkjet cartridge, and B, if you accept the installation of a firmware update for security, because, you know, your foreign inkjet cartridge could attack you, hurt you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, it could happen. It could squirt an eye and, you know, you'd be blind. But, but anyway, so I have been...
You know, my favorite thing, I don't know if it was that company or if it was another company in the same area that literally made some comment about, well, we have to do this in order to protect our users.
That's them.
But the whole idea is if they hadn't put the logic in, then they wouldn't have to protect you from it. It's a great protection racket. You know, oh, we put this logic in our cartridges, yeah, and now people might exploit it. Well, if you hadn't put the logic in the cartridges, if they were dumb, then I guess there wouldn't be anything to exploit now, wouldn't
it? Exactly. If it were a dumb cartridge, just had ink in it. But no, mm-hmm. No. So anyway, so I have been saying no to every firmware upgrade notification on my printer. I mean, it's on Wi-Fi, so it does OTA. And but, you know, someday I'm going to get sloppier, or, you know, my wife or somebody will just, although they're trained, you know, my wife's trained, I should train not to say yes to that, to just hit no if you see it, you know.
Just say no.
Just say no. And, but, you know, or they may figure out a way to, you know, exploit my printer and just update it without me knowing it. Who knows, right? And so I've been looking around for alternate. In the meantime, I thought, oh, I'll try this thermal thing. I'm leaning towards Epson, but they don't have ink cartridges anymore. They have just that you pour it. It's called the Ecotec. But so I got this thing, and so it has no ink. So right away, you know, you're, I don't know if the word's not saving money, but you're not spending money on ink every time you print. But the downside is the paper is really expensive. So as an example, just regular 8.5 by 11 printer paper of 500 sheets is about $8. I just recently ordered a ream, so I know it's about $8 for 500. And on the other hand, the printer paper, thermal printer paper, you can't use regular print paper, obviously. I think it was about $20 for 100 sheets. So, you know, $100 for a ream, essentially, a big ream, a regular size ream. But then I looked, well, what does a cartridge cost? And for my printer, the cartridges are $51 just for the blank ink cartridge. That's not including color. Talking about black ink, it's thermal. Mm-hmm. And it prints about 750 pages. So if you add the paper and the ink together, it costs about 14 cents per page for an inkjet, my in particular inkjet print. And it costs about 18 cents a page for thermal. So it's double digits more, but I thought, you know, in a pinch, until I decide what other printer to buy and get new ink supplies, this will do it. So I'm going to test that real soon. You just plug it in via USB, and it just should work. So I'm looking at it right now. I'll show it to John. This is a Foamimo.
Yeah, I remember seeing those when I looked at mine, and I've thought about it. If I needed to do full size paper, probably would look into that, because most of the stuff I don't need color, and I also don't need longevity.
Yeah,
if it dies in a couple of you know, 10 years or so, is I think what the thermal lifespan is, thermal, whatever. The only brand today that I would even consider, Epson, I do like the EcoTank, and Brother is always kind of one that flies under the radar, but Brother has still a pretty good reputation when it comes to printers and such, but they... they're not as flashy as that H something something mother something P company.
Yeah. You know, interestingly enough, my first high quality printer, and I had some Epson, what were called, dot matrix, but my first high quality printer was a Brother. It was a, mm-hmm. Was it Daisy Wheel? Might have been a Daisy Wheel or some other kind of impact printer, but it basically was a high quality impact. And it was a pretty good printer. It was slow as molasses. Because it was impact. And if for people who don't remember what a Daisy Wheel is, go on YouTube and look up Daisy Wheel. I'm sure there's some videos of how it worked. You'll be amused. You'll think, oh my gosh, is this the 19th century? But no.
I had an Impact printer in the 90s that I picked up. It was from the 80s. I picked it up used, and I used it for only one purpose, and that was when long-distance calling was still expensive, and my wife was a long-distance call away, or she was micro-grad at that. There was a company that was offering, if you signed up for their newsletter, you got a free phone card for 30 minutes of long-distance calling.
Yeah.
And I had email domains that I could sign up virtually unlimited email addresses. So I had these phone card PIN numbers that were 30 minutes at a time.
Right.
And I needed some way to print them out. So I used a, you know, it was great for an Impact printer because cheap and, you know, plentiful. Then the company kind of got wind that someone was abusing their goodwill. And so they limited them to 10 minute phone cards. But that just meant that I used it three times as often. You know, when you are a 16-year-old kid and you're trying to hide long-distance phone charges from your parents and you don't have the money to buy phone cards, you get creative. And I got very creative.
And this is why you're now a PhD.
Yeah. It's dangerous when you know how to be a tech person. But also are young, you know, and you've got the time. It, you know, right now, I remember it was worth it to me eventually. I did find a service that you could sign up, and for $80 a month, you could make unlimited long-distance calls.
Oh, that sounds pretty good.
And I did use that until I finally got a cell phone that had nights and weekend minutes, and then I could use that.
Yeah. Yeah, and for those too young to remember nights and weekend minutes, we used to pay by the minute for cell phones.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, a lot. This is a long- it was not even, you know, you think microtransactions are bad today. Those were the original microtransactions, you know?
Yeah.
You haven't lived until you've been on a phone call having an argument with someone and realizing that you're paying money to continue to have an argument with someone. You know, like, this is even more frustrating now. Not only are you wrong, you're costing me money because you're wrong, you know?
In the 90s, my recollection is that long-distance cell phone calls cost more than local, kind of like landline.
Mm-hmm.
And the plan that I didn't have, I mean, it was cell phone. I didn't have a cell phone yet. This was like 95. But I had a company cell phone that I could use when I traveled. And I remember they telling me, you know, be careful with this thing if you're making calls. You know, go ahead and make personal calls, whatever you have to. But it's 79 cents a minute.
So,
long distance. So be careful how you use it. Any rate, so that's my story about thermal printers. It's just kind of my fallback in case one day my HP H something P decides, oh, you know, you're using a third party ink. Well, we know you're using a third party ink cartridge, and we're going to do something about it without you choosing. And we're just going to brick your printer. I think there's a class action.
And suspiciously, that will happen in the next 3 hours.
Yeah,
as soon as it hears you say it enough times, it will. Yeah. It'll find a way to brick it.
So this will get me through until I can run over to Costco and pick up a new printer, I guess. Okay. So that's one of my stories, I guess, my gadget of the week. You may test some other gadgets we can find. But I did want to get to your topic because I want to hear what you have to say. And I got some.
Yeah. So we've been talking about the iPads and hopefully an imminent launch of new iPads. My iPad Pro that I use every day is a late 2018 model. So it's quite old at this point by tech standards. So I'm pretty sure I want to upgrade it. My MacBook Pro, though, is a 2020 at this point. And I've been thinking about, do I want to get something where I don't have an M chip. I have the last of the Intel generation. It was on purpose. I wanted to have that last Intel MacBook in my collection for the future. But it's getting harder and harder to justify upgrading these days. You know, I was going to upgrade. If you listen to the podcast, I wanted to upgrade the last iPad Pro, and I just didn't. I could have. It was a 4-year-old iPad at this point. At that point, now it's a 6-year-old iPad. So it's interesting, and I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on what makes it worth the time and money to upgrade a core item of your arsenal these days. What do you look for? What do you decide? How do you decide?
Yeah. Well, you know, the last time I bought a new Mac of any kind was my MacBook Air M1, and I just looked it up before the podcast, and I thought, oh, it's only like 2 years old, isn't it? No, I bought it November 2020 when it was released. So it is, you know, it's 3.5 years old right now, roughly.
Yeah.
And but the good thing is it still feels fast. It still works fine. I don't feel like I am missing anything by using it. And I don't feel the need, you know? I mean, if I had a couple thousand bucks lying around, I'd go get a new Amphis because need it. My M1 works fine. And in fact, you know, actually right now I'm using a 2019 MacBook Pro Intel, the last one with the touch bar, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what the reason is why I use this one. It's just habit. It's like a lucky cap. It's what I use to record most podcasts, except for last week where it was not so lucky. But the reason I upgraded just 1 year later, from 2019, I bought my MacBook because there was talk of tariffs on items from China, which, you know, all Macs are, or I think they're all from. And I thought, well, I'll just get one now so that, you know, I don't get hit with the tariff. That didn't happen. And the next year when the M1 came out, I was really curious about it because it could run some iOS apps, which it turns out I tried it, it ran some, never used it again in terms of that feature.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say, if you have an Intel MacBook, which you do, one of the things I learned in terms of upgrading the MacBook from Intel to M1 is it runs so much cooler and quieter because,
mm-hmm.
you know, the fan never, I don't even know if it has a fan, but if it has one, it never kicks. Unlike my MacBook Pro, I can hear the fan right. And it's just a delight to use because it's just so cool. You know, right now, I think my MacBook's, I don't have my thermometer, but it's probably about 105 degrees right on each side of the touchpad. So I would say that's one reason if you simply want something that runs better in terms of cooler and quieter and all of that for the MacBook. The iPad, it's just time, John. I don't need to explain.
Well, I agree. It is. And that is one thing I know is a must upgrade is when I no longer get feature updates.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, not even just stability updates, but when it is literally, this is a feature you won't get. And I guess there are some features my MacBook and my iPad don't have right now because they are old. They're just not features that I've cared to use.
Yeah.
But yeah, that would be one thing where it's like, okay, it is time. And I do think I'm running out of not just feature upgrades on the iPad. I will probably likely be running out of stability upgrades on the iPad soon as well. So yeah, that is one thing that I look for. But that's, I guess, what makes it harder. When you've got something that's set up and it's your workflow, and this iPad for 5 years, 6 years now has been set up nicely. It's got all the apps on it I want. They're all set up in the way I want. If I get a new one, I probably will set it up from scratch again because I do feel that that's important every 5-6 years to create devices anew and not just restore from a backup. Of course, that might just be my old Windows Mobile and Android ways coming through and older iOS where things would get a little bit cruddy and, I guess, cluttery if you didn't ever so often just do a fresh new upgrade or a new install.
I think that's your Microsoft Windows 98 mentality, honestly.
It might be. It really might be. But still, I do think, well, and plus you get settings that I've still had over the last few years. I know I noticed this when I upgraded my watch, was that every so often you get a setting that just doesn't respond to logic. You know, you can reset it. So, for example, on old watch, if I restored it, I would get the daily notification for tasks that day 3 or 4 times that day. And it was just, you know, it just kept dinging. And I would turn it off in the reminders app and it would just go on again. And so it wasn't until I did a fresh watch install that went away.
You know, it's funny you mentioned it. I didn't have it in my list of things that I'm, you know, thinking about, but I type it in right now. I also still have an Apple, have a Watch Series 6. Current is
9.
And one of the weird things about my Apple Watch, I just noticed it a couple of weeks ago and I couldn't figure it out. There is and it's not the SPO2, you know, which I know in new watches or was turned. It's the, VO2 Max. I think it was VO2 Max, which, you know, should still work on my watch.
Well, VO2 Max should always work. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was not involved in that, well, you know, the class actions. I mean, not class action, but in the copyright trademark issue.
And for those wondering, it's labeled Cardio Fitness. It has not reported my Cardio Fitness since October of 2020. And interestingly, when I went to search for it, other people in like some of the Apple discussion groups have said the same thing. I can't remember if everybody's October 23. Then there are a couple of fixes they recommend, which none of which I've tried. But I found that kind of curious. And since I am now, you know, three versions behind, I'll be presumably four versions behind later this year. Maybe Apple Watch 10 is in my future. I'm giving that some thought. Only because a feature I found interesting. Also, it was improving. So like, wow, right when I was improving you. Well, you know, you upgrade your watches more frequently than I do. Not every year, but I think you're like on a 2 or 3 year cycle, maybe.
Yeah, I had gone from a 6 like you had to a Ultra 2. That's been my last upgrade. But that was a battery life issue for the most part. That was where I just was realizing I needed to have a little bit more battery life. And I have been very happy with the Ultra 2 battery life. But I've been kind of hard on my watches because I go out every day for usually about 45 to 60 minutes of activity and bike rides and all these other things that sometimes the watch is the only thing that goes with me.
Oh, because you have a healthy watch also. So that's even
more larger.
Yeah. You know, I have to say that two things about my Apple Watch is one, I did turn off the always on display to preserve battery life because, you know, do I really need to see my watch? Especially now that I'm retired, do I really need to see my watch all the time? It's just, you know, I mean, usually the only time you look at watches is what day is it? it's not so much what time, but what day is it? And I'm not sure. If I ever have to pass one of those cognitive tests to, you know, I might fail because it's what day is it? Oh, daytime? I don't know.
Yeah.
But so I did turn
to day that ends in Y, you know.
Yeah, exactly. A couple of vowels in there. The other thing I did was I switched it to the adaptive charging, basically to 80% to preserve its battery life a little bit more. And that seems to be working. And I have to say that, you know, my watch used to be like at 15-20% at the end of a day, like 11 p.m. But these days after, I don't know why, but, you know, I do know why. The combination of turning off the always-on display and using the adaptive charging, I guess, to train it a little, the battery a little better. It's usually about 50% at the end of a day these days. I don't know if it's because I'm walking less, and I do know that's true. I used to, when I was working, I was walking about 11, 12,000 steps a day, and I'm down to about 7. So it's, you know, significantly fewer steps. But I'm okay with this battery right now. Still have to charge it every night. But I am thinking about it just because I want the VO2, unless I can mix it. The other thing I wanted to ask you is about AirPods Pro. I still have I'm using right now the AirPods Pro first generation. So I don't have some of the cool new features that you have, like gestures.
Honestly, I definitely think it's a massive upgrade to do AirPods Pro 2, just because for my use scenario, the adaptive conversation audio leveling has been really amazing. And where I see this, honestly, is in my daily walks. I think I've mentioned a couple times on the podcast, I go out for a walk. The conversational awareness is great. Someone says something to me and my podcast immediately, you know, goes down in volume or it just pauses completely. That really is helpful. And also, I think I mentioned the street cleaner. You know, the street cleaner will go by. It'll be very loud. I used to have to turn on noise canceling so I could still hear my podcast. Now, all I have to do is just nothing. And it will automatically turn on. And I'm not even aware that it is changing the volume level. So definitely, there are some nice features that I think are worth the upgrade. And if you've had, I had AirPods Pro 1s from their launch. And what I also noticed was that mine were starting to get a little bit at the scratchy issue in terms of occasionally the audio wasn't as clean on them as it should have been. So I definitely would recommend going for it if you've not upgraded and if you're having any issues with your AirPods. it would be a good upgrade for you.
As you may recall, John, my AirPods, no matter which ear tip I use, falls out of my ears when just like walking, not even running or jogging. And so I only use them for podcasts these days. Mm-hmm. And sometimes if I'm sitting still, you know, not moving around so they don't fall out, and you know, just listening to some spatial audio stuff. But that's about it. But I am curious, you know, maybe the new ones will fit better. Or I'll find some third party ear tips to make them fit better. I should note that as far as buying stuff, I have a 2022, I guess it's the last iPad Pro M2. Oh, yeah, it's M2. So it's the fastest computer in my house. M2 iPad Pro for 2022. And it's working fine. I have no complaints. But if they put a camera, a front-facing camera, in the landscape mode, I will buy that because I would use my iPad for, you know, for this kind of thing. If we can get Adobe Podcast Studio backward, then I can record on an iPad Pro. Nice. Okay. So what do you think? So definitely an iPad Pro or maybe an iPad Mini? Probably Pro, I'm going
to
say.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go back to the Pro and maybe try that until the Mini refreshes to something more that I would want. I'm pretty happy with my 2021 iPad Pro or iPad Mini, but I might try to go back to just an iPad Pro by itself. Probably will be the 11-inch size, and you know, I'll probably get the fancy keyboard, as I do use the keyboard quite a bit on my iPad Pro. So, I probably will go for it.
I will say something, and I have never used a Magic Keyboard, but I have seen other people, and I've bought some, you know, much less expensive clones for my 11-inch MacBook. I think the fitted Magic Keyboard clones, or at least the ones that I have, it's too small. It's not wide enough. So people who have the iPad Pro 12.9, you know, which is like notebook size pretty much. I have a 13-inch MacBook Pro. That is the perfect width for a Magic Keyboard. So you live pretty far from if you know anybody with a Magic Keyboard, the 12.9 and 11, ask them if you can just look at it and type on it. Because I think you'll find, you know, and you're a pretty tall guy. And so I'm going to guess your fingers, you know, probably want a little bit more room than the average Joe. Or the average John.
And you
might find that the 11-inch fitted keyboard is...
It's possible. So I do think that's one of the reasons why I like to play around with these things if I can get them. But we'll see. I'll figure it out as I get closer, especially as I see what they refresh. Because that's the other unknown. We have no idea what they'll refresh in terms of the Magic or the step-down keyboard, kind of the portfolio keyboard like I have now. So,
well, the big deal for you going from, you know, the A-series iPad Pro to an M-series iPad Pro is Stage Manager will work a lot better because you can now use an extended display. Well, right now, you're limited to mirror display. We have put a big monitor on it. And it really makes a difference to me. Stage Manager becomes useful, not just usable, but useful with an extended display versus a mirrored display. And I think that would probably be the biggest deal for you. And just the speed of it. It's noticeably faster than... And I still have my old iPad because my old... non-A-series iPad, about the same age as yours, I think. It had a little green line, and so they wouldn't let me turn it in, even though it's a firmware problem, because it's always... They said I had it replaced once, and they wouldn't replace me, and then I couldn't do it. But it still runs, you know, it still runs okay, but the M2 iPad Pro is just noticeably drawing it. Okay, John, I hope this recording comes out okay. I think we'll stick to...
If not, we'll just blame Don. You know, we could blame last week too if we wanted to. Yeah. He should have tested more.
And I'll test Adobe Podcast Studio a bit more, and we'll probably eventually go back to it because I like the sound quality. But in the meantime, I'm probably going to have to pay my $100 a year to go upgrade to from free to Adobe Express Premium, so I can use it to enhance this audio that we're recording off. Any rate, so I will debate whether I want to spend $100 today or not. Otherwise, there are other ways around. Okay, folks, that's it for Bulbly's Podcast 502, and we will talk to you next.